Welcome to season 7 of the Making a Marketer podcast with your hosts, Megan Powers with Powers of Marketing and Jen Cole with Gretiman Group and Xstand. The show is for all levels of experience, talking marketing, business, and branding with the brightest of minds as our guests. Lots of learning and laughing. Here we go. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 147 of the Making a Marketer podcast. I'm Megan Powers with Powers of Marketing. This podcast, of course, is made possible by Powers of Marketing. We focus on strategic content creation, including podcast and event production, hosting and emceeing, and my lovely co-host who I haven't spoken to in forever, Miss Jen Cole. Hi, Jen. You got this a little thing coming up in the next couple weeks, huh?
We're really busy. You should see, like, I thought the dining room has been the problem. Now it's all moved to the living room where all of the wedding decor is packed and ready to go out the door.
For those who have not been listening, you're new to the show, Jen is getting married on April 20th. So I'll be flying to Wichita on the 18th. Yeah, looking forward to a really good party, which I'm sure with Jen and Tim, it's always a good time.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really excited. I can't. That's next week now. You know, it's bananas. It's crazy. I do like to think about it. Like that.
Well, I'm sure you guys are on top of everything.
We are. It's all good.
I'm excited. Also excited to get back to Wichita. It's been a minute. So
I'm so excited for that too. Lots of new things to show you.
Excellent. Okay, and our guest today is the amazing Phil Palin. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Hi, new friends. Thanks for having me.
Hi. Absolutely.
I'm so excited that you're here.
Yeah, Phil was a reco. Goldie Chan recommended Phil to us. And so we are. She's great. Yeah. So we're excited to dig into and talk about brand ambassador programs, which is interesting because I just changed the background. We record this on Zoom and I just changed the background from chief wine officer to just a pretty sky background. But I am considered a brand ambassador for Chief Wine Officer. I host and facilitate events for them both online and in person. I'll actually traveling Wednesday morning to do one in San Francisco on Wednesday night. So I am excited to hear your take, Phil, on all things brand ambassadordom.
I love this topic.
All right. So let me read your brief bio. Phil Palin is a personal branding expert and keynote speaker. His non-conventional approach to digital marketing and talent for social media has built him a global audience. As a brand strategist, Phil has advised hundreds of brands from over 30 countries, including a shark on Shark Tank, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, politicians, and some of the most important names in entertainment. A digital nomad and globetrotter, Phil has delivered speeches on 5 different continents and frequently appears as an expert contributor in media outlets around the world, including CNN, Access Hollywood, and The Daily Mail. I mean, I think he knows what he's talking about. Can you tell us who the shark is or no?
Not officially, but I can tell you it's the nicest one. Let's go.
Wonderful. That's awesome. Sounds like it's probably a good working experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All cops mine will have to ask you if my guess is right.
Yeah.
What's wrong? Yeah. Well, I probably could, but I just like to be, you guys know, working in social media and non-client projects, I always like to err on the side of caution and privacy for all of the people that I work with.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Except the miles of clients you have on your website. All those folks.
So impressive.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. So cool. Yeah, there's a lot of them on there. It's sometimes hard to figure out how do you show, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but how do you illustrate strategic work? Luckily, in my field, a lot of things are visual. So that tends to be how I lead. Like, it's really easy to show a completed website or a brand identity, but it's less hard to show, you know, here was the challenge that we had and here was the output of that. I'm constantly thinking about how do we illustrate that?
Yeah, strategy, it's the most important piece, but it's the hardest piece to highlight. Yeah, yeah, totally. All right, Jen, let's kick this thing off.
Sure, sure, sure. So we're going to start with strategy. Speaking of strategies, so to get us started, can you share some strategies for identifying and vetting potential brand ambassadors who align with the company's values, but also their messaging? And then why is it so important to spend time on this specific part of the process?
Oh, that's a great question. We're seeing now, I mean, brand ambassador, what does that mean? Maybe we start by defining what that is.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? Because we open social media and it's no longer just celebrities talking about brands, products, or services that they're endorsing. A brand ambassador could be someone who really is a super fan of your product or service, maybe through their own experience and legitimately wants to share that with friends. It could also be someone that's being paid by a brand to endorse it, but that is no longer like cheese ball infomercial necessarily. It could also be someone that's a mix of the two. It could be a micro-influencer, no longer just a celebrity. It could be a micro-influencer who's used the product and loved it and is posting about it. It's harder to know these days. And so I think when we're thinking about brand ambassadors, which in some respect have replaced the traditional billboard and like radio ad, right? These brands that used to just hurl money at these things without any real way of keeping track of a performance. And those are expensive things, right? Traditional means of marketing and advertising. Now we can work with smaller creators and more of them, you know, if they're smaller for a certain budget. And I think to answer your question now that we know what we're talking about, I think it's important to just think about authenticity. I hate that word and I try to avoid it, but I think we need to bring it up in this case. It's thinking about someone that can speak authentically about your brand or your product or your service. And, you know, the first group of people I would think about are people that have bought my product or service. I would think about, you know, if someone is raving about a great experience that they've had, those are typically going to be the strongest sources of referrals. As a branding agency, I have my name in the footer of every website that I've made. And that has, over the years, been one of my strongest sources of referrals in terms of, you know, people finding my work through an endorsement of someone else, whether it's indirectly named in the footer of a website or directly. It could be someone saying, hey, this guy did my website. You should get in touch with him. So I think in this particular stage, we're thinking about where are those existing opportunities to mine, you know, authentic connection or endorsement.
You really hit home with talking about the people that are already using or like, feel like that's a natural place to start, because if they already love what you're doing and they already love you and they're posting about it, then wouldn't they be like kind of a natural fit? I mean, there's probably some outliers where they aren't, but I would say that's a great place to start. And so that's kind of where I was thinking in my head. And it's really cool to hear the validation behind that.
From
your expertise.
One good exercise, if someone is trying, is thinking, you know, I see my friends or I see my peers doing brand deals, you know, should I hop on that train? I say, absolutely. You don't need to be an influencer or a creator with hundreds of thousands of followers. You can be an everyday, insert the title of what you do, the power of referral, the power of recommendation. You take inventory of every product you touch from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed at night. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but I'm talking toothpaste. I'm talking, you know, every little product you touch from the moment you go down to the kitchen and you come over to your desk. That's what my daily commute looks like. these are brands that are likely brands that are hungry for stories, for instances of real use and fandom, if you will. I'm a brand strategist by trade. So for over 10 years, I've had a digital agency. Last year, 50% of my income was client work. And the other 50%, I combine this category, but speaking, sponsored content, which is my greatest one, and affiliates. I kind of combine those all together in terms of all the ways in which I show up online and get paid by a brand for it. That was 50% of my income last year. And 4 years ago, it was zero.
Wow.
So that's why I speak enthusiastically about these things. This isn't what I do by nature, but I do love to talk. I love to teach, I love to educate, and I love to try tools and I love to recommend tools. And it has become a huge part of my job.
That's awesome. So Jen was given a company because of her fandom.
Wild story.
A standing desk called X Stand that she and her fiance were just given because she raved about it so much and they thought no one else should have it but Jen. And we can get a little bit more into some of the other stuff that maybe, Jen, if you want to share later. But so let's talk about back to strategy, you know, as we always want to set goals, right? Like we need a successful strategy. How can companies measure the success of their brand ambassador program and tie it back to those business goals that they have?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are different ways. Some of the more obvious ones are views, clicks on, you know, hyperlink clicks. Ideally, as a brand, you're providing trackable metrics to your creators or to your brand ambassadors. That's as simple as, well, maybe it's not that simple, but setting up an affiliate program is a good start. There are lots of apps and tools that make this easier than doing it yourself from scratch. Brands, you know, use all kinds of stuff. Partnerize is one that shows up a lot. Impact is another one for some of the bigger brands. There's lots of these tools out there that you can sign up for that give you the ability to create a referral program. Tracking those links and also just making time to review analytics sounds silly, but it's an important reminder that we get so focused on like, okay, let's get them all, you know, get your creators the right links and get them the brief and then check over what they're posting, give them approval, posted by this date. It doesn't end there. You know, it feels like it, you definitely want to make time to review performance, what worked and what didn't work. Now, from my position in the creator role, I would encourage brands to not bank on one piece of content or one campaign. Here's what I mean by that. If that's all the budget allows, I understand, but I think you're better to have a longer-term partnership with the creator that you give more than one opportunity to hit a home run. And so from a creator standpoint, you know, when I have a brand and I do a one-off, a one and done, I'll be honest, my mission is to get that thing created and sent and shipped and move on, right? Versus longer term partnerships. For me, I have a few of those. One, my largest being Adobe. Other brands like Connect Team, and there's some really, really great Uscreen, a membership community. There's some apps that I have legitimately become a brand ambassador for simply based on using them and becoming better at them by creating multiple pieces of content and more importantly, building a relationship with the actual brand. But I found that when I'm given more than one opportunity to create, there are things I can control. The things that I can control are a high quality video that explains the platform or tool. In my case, that's kind of my niche, is marketing tools and software. Every video I do, I get better at it. I get more confident, but I can't guarantee that a video is going to go viral. I sometimes have to try a few different approaches before we arrive there. And when brands appreciate and give me that space to create, it builds the relationship in a really positive way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I was doing stuff for AgoraPulse for a while, and it was because I naturally I was using their tool when I worked for Social Media Examiner, and like when I would post from Social Media Marketing World about using AgoraPulse, like, you know, that you can only imagine the eyeballs that it got because I was using the conference hashtag. But then eventually they're like, hey, you want to come in and be part of our brand ambassador program? I was like, absolutely I do. What does this mean? This is great. I already post about you guys all the time. But they did that. They came in like, okay, what are your strengths and where can we put you to work and what do you want to provide for us? And there were many options. Like you could speak at their summit, you could provide blog posts, you could be part of their, you know, monthly live show that they did. Like there were a lot of options and it was kind of just played to your strengths and your comfortability levels. But that it was a good fit. That's how you know a good fit, I think.
They are a good example. Shout out to Mike Alton, who had me on his podcast last week.
Awesome. We love Mike.
Yeah, we love Mike. He's just a great, great guy. And he's a perfect example of someone that invests in these types of relationships. Another good example would be Rob Balasabas, who is at Uscreen. His full-time job is to connect with creators and actually build brand advocates.
Yeah.
So Mike is a good example. Rob is a good example. How interesting that we know these people.
Yeah.
We know these people.
They've both been on the show.
Rob so well. That's great. And then I would have to shout out to Emily Corbin, who works at Adobe and runs the Adobe Express Ambassador Program. I was around the 30th or so ambassador program now.
Wow.
Is over 200 ambassadors. It's
amazing.
Yeah. Those are, well, it's fun. Those are some good examples of brands that had, you didn't ask me that, but we arrived there. Those are some of the best ambassador programs that exist.
Just going to say, I want to mention too, though, disclosure of the fact that you are an ambassador, that you are, like, if there's a link that you're an affiliate, that you know, not just if you're benefiting from it financially, which absolutely that's the law, right? You have to disclose.
Yes.
But also just, it just makes good business sense to like let viewers know that that's what's going on.
Definitely. Yeah. And brands provide different guidelines on how to go about doing that. And guidelines can actually change. For one of the brands I'm working with today, guidelines completely changed from what they were a month ago. And so now we're having to kind of reconfigure how we speak about the brand. It's a good idea. It's not the most exciting activity for the day, but to review the FTC, you know, guidelines and rules, it's a good idea to know what is the law. It's always safe to obviously disclose partnerships and affiliate deals. It's the simplest saying. The links in this email, the links in this video are, you know, they may include affiliate links, which means, I always like to say, which means I may be compensated at no extra cost to you. I sometimes say something like that. It's like,
oh, that's a good way to
extra.
Phrase it.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. You're not paying extra. Yeah. It's just, you know, and then I always say thanks. Like, thanks for using it. And I think nowadays, in many cases, if someone finds out about a brand through you, they're actually more enticed to use your link. That's kind of like how we navigate that nowadays. It's like, oh, can I sign up for Flowdesk, you know, using your link because I found out about it through you? And that's kind of just how it is now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and to go back to your answer on my question, in terms of the data, I find it really interesting. Everyone wants data. Everyone, like, we can't do anything unless we track it. But are we actually doing anything with the data that we're tracking? Like, so to your point, I think it's important for people to look at, you know, when you can track it back. Like, right, if it is a link, it's harder to gauge, like, buyer sentiment unless there's that direct link, right? Like, how many people started using AgoraPulse because I mentioned it and I'm not even a brand ambassador, you know what I mean? Like, who knows?
So some brands will use a platform specifically for that. A popular one is called Creator IQ, and that's one where you connect your relevant social media platforms for a specific campaign. And whoever has created that account, in this case, I think it would be the brand. In my case, my manager actually uses it to be able to send a real-time report. That report, it's like a dynamic report that will change based on the performance of the content. The other thing we have to factor into this is the lifetime of content for the platform you're posting on. So Instagram content, are we really looking at it 1 week after it's posted? Not very often. Typically, content goes to die. And yet YouTube for me, which is my priority platform. Listen, I love Instagram. I keep in touch with all my friends on Instagram and I do post on Instagram. But for me, my priority is YouTube, where the content that I work really hard to create lives a lot longer.
In fact,
I have videos that will perform better 1 year after I post them than within the first month that I post them, unless it's something timely. So that's another layer to this is, on Instagram, we look for that kind of instant gratification in the first week or two that it's posted. We can pretty much generate a report and call it a day, know the stats. But then on YouTube, I've got video, you know, my best performing video is 500,000 views from 3 years ago. And it continues every single day it has views. And that's another layer to this that kind of makes things a little interesting.
Yeah, YouTube lives on. So as we move kind of further into, we talked a little bit about this, but I want to, and that is like, how can companies ensure that the brand ambassadors are effectively representing the brand itself and the brand's values on their social media platforms?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think more times than not, it's a good idea to let creators have some space to create.
Yeah.
And I will occasionally have to, it's kind of fun to answer these questions from like, the creator space, but then having worked with such a quantity of brands, I've had all different experiences.
Yeah.
One of them being, I will sometimes have to remind a brand politely and professionally, but still assertively, that I'm not hired to make an explainer video for their platform. You know, if you want me to do that, I'm happy to do it. I have a very animated voice, but honey, you're going to pay more for that. If I'm taking orders, you got to pay for it. If I'm creating a video that's a review or even a dedicated video on YouTube, that's on my terms. Of course, I'm going to follow the brief and the guidelines of what it is you want thematically and features, you know, driven. But I think the best performing content is created from the creator that knows their audience and knows what has worked for them in the past.
Yeah.
And so in many cases, it's actually a brand not giving more information or parameters on what to create, but actually in many cases, giving less. Specify two or three things you know you want mentioned if it makes sense. Here's just like anything, it's kind of like, here's what done looks like, or here's what a good outcome looks like, but I'm going to trust you to get there in the way that makes sense for you.
You make a really great point because, as you know, when you're creating content and you've been creating consistent content for a really long time, your followers, they get to know you and they get to know the real you and how you present something. And so I feel like if you are then given a span, you know, very strict guidelines to follow, it's taking out your personality and your followers are going to know. They're going to be able to tell the difference. And then you might even lose a little bit of trust from them because they're like, oh, she's pitching us something. I don't really like this. It's kind of icky.
Yep, exactly. And so if you can, I mean, it goes to what Megan said earlier, like it's better to disclose it up front. It's better to be honest about it. It's the creator's job to connect the dots. Almost every video I post nowadays is sponsored. And I'll say something to the effect, you know, this video is sponsored by this app, but I'm recommending it because I've tried it and I really like it. And I think you're going to like it too. But I'm recommending it. I've mentioned it multiple times on this channel because it's a brand I really believe in. I think you're going to see why today. Like, those are the kinds of things that I would say that are kind of like, it's a nicer way to say it's an ad, but you should still pay attention to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Listen to me. Help me help you.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really good segue into our next question, which is kind of like having a period of orientation. You know, if there's a get to know you phase, like with between the brand and the ambassadors, can you talk a little bit about the importance of providing training, to your point, to not be that creepy, weird, and you know, potential development opportunities for brand ambassadors that'll really help them in the role?
Yes, I make sure that I have a tentative or better yet signed contract with a brand before I start creating. And so from the brand perspective, you want to remember that the creator you're reaching out to is likely getting, I get about 20 to 30 emails a day from brands that are pitching me to create. My name is visible out there. And even if I'm not a huge, huge creator, I'm big enough and I have enough examples out there that I'm getting picked up in databases, you know, as a creator. And so for me, I cannot get on the phone with 30 brands that are pitching me today. So I have to have something in place. Luckily, I have a manager. That's one of my methods. But I need to have something in place in the form of a filter so that I might get on 3 of those calls once I've confirmed a scope of working together. So brands that want to talk and get on the phone with me and then negotiate prices, Phil doesn't have time for that. And a lot of other creators don't have time for affiliate only deals. Honey, you wish. Not anymore. My first 3 brand deals were affiliate only, and I thought it was the coolest thing when I got moisturizer sent to me for free. That is not cool to me anymore. This is my job. It's still kind of cool, but you know, I have to remember this is work. I have to get paid for it. I don't pay my rent with moisturizer. So I think just, you know, from the brand perspective, remembering that you're building a relationship, your creator is probably going to want something signed or at least a tentative working scope understood, likely by email. And then at that point, once you've confirmed, I'm happy to hop on a call with you. I record the call because I will listen to the phrasing and the way that you describe. One of the questions that I ask the brand, it's my favorite question to ask someone on a brand. I'll say, like, put aside the like corporate speak for a second and all the things you were told to say, but what features do you like the best? And they're like, Oh, I'm like, no, you, like you specifically, I want your answer to be different than someone else in the company that I would ask. Like, what do you get excited about? Or what stories have you heard that make you really proud to work at this brand, product or service? Those are like those little moments for me where I can mine those stories. And honestly, it helps me create more efficiently by hearing from someone who's in the trenches.
Smart. All right. So definitely interaction, calls with the brand and talking through. I guess they don't all have to have like a set training program or, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. A lot of them don't. A lot of them, I'll do like almost like an onboarding call like I would with like a customer service rep. But again, from my point of view, it might be a little different depending on the type of work that you're creating for. The large majority of my projects are inbound. So I do very little outreach to find new brands. Every day I have an inbox full of people that want me to make videos for them. And it's just a matter of finding the right ones that I'm excited about and the ones that are going to pay me the rate that I know I should be paid to create. Right. My manager helps me with that. We weed them out. We get that nice little group kind of focused on. But yeah, it is kind of this mutual understanding where I want the brand to help me efficiently understand what they want communicated. And then also be available if I have any questions. Sometimes I'll have questions up front, but usually I'll have questions right when I'm in the middle of creating. And I find that the brands that get back to me as quickly as possible, that also helps, just knowing that, you know, we're usually on a timeline.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I'm going to take a little brain break. We are recording this on Monday, April 8th, during the solar eclipse, which I didn't learn about until Saturday, which shows you how much I'm paying attention. So I thought, and it's funny, I'm just going to give my answer, which I never do. I usually let you guys answer first. But while sitting here, when it started, I took a little video with shadows, and then there were no shadows. And I took another little video, and then the shadows came back, and I took another little video. And that's my evidence that the solar eclipse happened today. Because for me, it's like, oh, it's cool, but it's not like I have never gone out of my way to go and get glasses, you know, to see it. I've never actually created the pinhole box thing. I think this is a once in a lifetime solar eclipse. I don't know. So I'm curious to hear from you both. Is this something you guys have an interest in? And would you travel to be in the path of totality? Because that's the other thing. The biggest thing on news is like that people are traveling and then there's going to be this huge storm in Texas and everyone's going to be trying to get back on the road to get out of Dodge and they're going to hit a huge storm. So Jen saw the question first, so I'll let her answer.
So
that's my answer. No, the answer is no.
The answer is no. The answer for me is kind of, because back in 2017, I did go get the glasses and I did take my kids out of school and we went downtown and we made a big thing of it. We got really cool pictures and we had a really great time. Then we all went out to lunch. But then this time, Tim and I talked about it over Easter weekend and we're thinking, you know, it's really not that far from us. But then Tim went into Google. And, you know, I work from home on Mondays. And so it was a thought to actually travel down there until Tim's like, well, never mind. It's 5 hours from us. So that's not really worth it because, you know, he's already taking off enough work. And so kind of so am I, you know, for the wedding. So it was just one of those things where right. It's not really a priority, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah. And weather, you could travel all that way and then you get a cloudy day and you don't get to see it. You get bup kiss.
Right.
So
no,
what about you?
Absolutely no.
Phil, what about you?
I wish I had the time to like adjust my travel plans to go see the sun line up with the moon. But honey, I got a lot of stuff to do at this desk. And I'm going to go out for a little jog after this. And I'm going to look into the sky. And whatever I see is what I see. And I will be satisfied. Nice. I live in Florida, so I have no idea. You can see my general level of interest in this. I have no idea what I'm going to see, if it's eclipsing or not.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't really care.
Okay. Cool. All right. So we're on semi-similar pages. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Yeah. It's fine. It's they open our roof. So I'm hearing people scuffle above me to go watch it from the roof of my building.
I look forward to seeing everyone's posts about it on social media.
Right.
That's, yeah.
Totally.
I'm good with that. I'm good with
that. I listened to The Daily this morning and it was about a guy who like his life milestones he can trace to like this eclipse or that eclipse, and that's how into it he is. So
wow.
All right. Jen, let's kick off the second half.
All right, back to the brand ambassadorship conversation. All right, so can you share some tips on how to create a strong ambassador agreement that outlines expectations and responsibilities for both the company and the ambassador?
Yes, I can. I've never drafted one myself, but I've signed a lot of them. And so there are issues that have come up.
I'm sure.
From experience that I can speak to. Timeline. So nothing's more irritating for a creator than one, having to wait to get paid until the very end. And I understand that that's just the way it is with some brands. But let me give you an example this morning. I have a $3,000 brand deal for an advertisement that's going to be whitelisted and used for 6 months. And I wrote a script for it. I had a call with the brand. And then they emailed me today via their agency that the feature is going to change and they're going to have to delay the project by a few months and I haven't been paid. So you can imagine the email. Now you get a sense of my personality from this call. You can imagine the email that I send back to them and how kind I was.
Per this email
is not going to be as nice as the last email. And every email thereafter is going to be a little more sour. You know, before you hire creators, make sure you can adhere to the timeline for your product or service. In many cases, that's not an issue. But in some cases, if it's a brand new feature or product, like if there's going to be delays, you best communicate that upfront, especially if the creator is getting paid at the end. I brought up something there, whitelisting, or the ability for you to use that user-generated content as an advertisement. Creators expect to be paid more or separately for that type of engagement. If you are using that piece of content as an ad, that needs to be a separate line item on the contract. And it doesn't have to be a huge amount extra. There's different kind of guidelines. That's when it's helpful to have a manager or have someone that interfaces with this stuff day to day. So I can't really tell you how much extra they charge for it. For me, it's a different rate per brand, but it's definitely a good idea to address that up front. Those are the two things that are coming to mind in a contract that often gets skipped, but shouldn't.
Super smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not getting deposits for me, for every work I've ever done, I've gotten deposits, but I understand that sometimes that's harder to do depending on the brand.
That's another point. Paying on time. Like one of my favorite brands that I work with, they are very detailed about the edits that they require on videos. And I'm fine with it because when I send an invoice, they pay it within 48 hours.
Nice.
Honey, you give me all the details and all the corrections and changes you want that are going to make our video better. But like, don't do that and then be slow to pay me.
Right.
This is becoming a give and take session for me, by the way. Yeah. I haven't noticed. Events, sexual, all these brands that irritate me. Thank you for that.
We're here to help. It's a safe space.
Right. It's just us. It's just we're just three of us talking. Nobody else is listening. It's fine. all right. So let's talk a little bit about diversity of these brand ambassadors. So if you're setting up a brand ambassador program, I think you probably want to make sure that your ambassadors are a diverse representative of their target audience. How do you ensure, like, if you're, I mean, and again, you're coming from the creator side, you're not coming from the person who's creating these brand ambassador programs, but what are your thoughts on that, on diversities to reach a wider range of customers?
I think it's genius, but I think diversity doesn't just mean, you know, gender, skin color, geography. That's not what diversity means solely. I mean, those things are very important to have different voices represented. But I also think the types of creators you're hiring, you might automatically think that it's a good idea to hire someone with millions of followers or subscribers. But you, with a little bit of research, will realize that actually that's not the sweet spot nowadays. Typically, it's smaller creators. And so diversity to me in this context also means working with people at all different levels, you know, all different levels of followers, subscribers, engagement. That should be reflected, obviously, in how much they're charging, you know, and also brands are they're creating well, then they're constantly growing, ideally. In some cases, they're not growing as fast as someone else. In my case, Instagram is not a huge priority platform for me, but I use it to stay on the radar of the audience that I've already gathered over the years. So it's actually not that important for me, for my Instagram to continue growing. I kind of like where it's at right now. I feel like I've got my tight-knit group of people whose radars I can stay on and vice versa. So I think diversity is all of the things that we know that word to represent, but it's also types of creators and different levels of creators. You know, you may have success with someone who's never done a brand deal that tells great stories on their Instagram stories. Lots of personality, or, you know, just by nature, good at social media. And you may find that that works better as a, you know, an ambassador post, or even as an ambassador boosted post as an ad, versus something that someone with X number of followers can create. So that's another cool component to that idea of diversity.
Super smart. Very good point.
Yeah, that was that definitely answered some questions. Care about that, because, you know, we mentioned different kinds of people, but different kind of content, because consistent creation about your brand in all kinds of different formats, I think it tells more of a 360, like the all around story of what you have to offer. And then I think it makes you more trustworthy as a brand itself, because people see all the different aspects and everyone has different perspectives on different things. And so being able to tell a story in all different perspectives too is, and that's what it is. It's all storytelling, honestly. So very, very good point there. Now, the last thing on the topic of brand ambassadorship today, can you share some advice on how companies can keep their brand ambassador program fresh and innovative? Because, I mean, we all see the same copy-paste on TikTok all day long.
Yeah.
Can you do that and then still maintain consistency with the brand identity itself?
Yeah. So to keep it fresh, be inspired by brands in your industry, but also brands not in your industry. There is a wealth of great examples of good content on the internet. And it shouldn't stress you out. And I say that mostly projecting, because it does stress me out. Every time I open the Explore page or I go onto TikTok, I feel inundated with all these great ideas that I didn't think of.
Yeah.
However, all of those viral posts and content ideas are typically strongly inspired and created by a source of inspiration that someone else has created. It's just how it is now. It's just how it is nowadays. So I would encourage you, before you start assigning ideas or content topics to people, actually just sit and observe. It's one of the steps that many brands skip. So quick to say, here's our product, here's our service, here are our priorities. Yeah, but like, just marinate on the fact that, is anyone really going to care about a sales pitch? Probably not. We all get inundated with sales pitches all, you know, every day. We've become really good at tuning it out. I grew up with a parrot. My parents, I don't know why, but they had a pet parrot. And I would be on the phone and I'd be like talking to my friends and they'd be like, is that a bird? Like, is that a parrot? I didn't even notice, because I had my whole adolescence was tuning that thing out of my life. Like, I didn't even hear it. Right?
Wow.
We do the same with ads. And so my recommendation is go to the Explore page and watch what people out of your industry are doing to tell a story. Don't just think like an everyday person on social media, but take inventory of those moments that reel you in and put your marketer hat on for a second and go, wait, that ad about that sunscreen, I just watched 35 seconds of it. Why did you watch 35 seconds of it? Most of my Instagram saves are ads. Ads that I realized 30 seconds in, damn it, they got me. Why am I watching this thing? And I save those. Yeah, I save those. I'll like DM them to myself. So when I go back and look and I need ideas for content, I'm pulling ideas from things that got me. And I would recommend brands do that.
That's so smart.
Yeah, one of my thoughtful Thursday posts recently, and that's my new weekly micro blogging thing that I'm doing about, like, I work in events, about attending events outside your industry, getting such different insight by doing that, but also like getting connected to different people. If you stay in the same place, you can get saturation, right? So anyway, this is a good point to that also in terms of brands and what good brands are doing with their ambassador programs as well. I think keeping an eye out for that is super smart.
And also going back to those saved posts, don't just have an unlimited stash of ideas that you're never going to look at after you save them. I have a reoccurring calendar invite in my calendar that says, go through Instagram saves once a month. And
that's so smart.
I'd clean them out because otherwise I don't want to be a hoarder. I don't want to be an Instagram hoarder.
Oh my gosh. You know,
isn't it funny though? Yeah, isn't it funny though that we think about that in the context of our homes and our physical spaces? But honeys, we have two versions of ourselves that we're juggling. We have the in-person experience and the online version, and we have to be digitally responsible as well.
I love the image. I have so many of those saved and I never go back and I never go watch them. Even for the wedding, I have like lists on TikTok and Instagram. And when's the plan to go back and review? I didn't set that part. Well,
and saved bookmarks in your browser. Like I created a new resources folder just because I don't have the time to scroll all the way down to the bottom of that folder, all the way to the end of my bookmarks. It's like, do I really want to take the time to like go there and delete them all? Like
this a rabbit hole.
On that same front, like having good hygiene, good browser hygiene, good Instagram hygiene. I love it.
In general. Yeah
for sure. All right. So our final question that we like to ask all of our guests is, what is one business challenge that you've experienced in your career, Phil, and how did you overcome it? Or what did you learn from it that might help our listeners?
Yeah, I tried not to think about this before you asked me because I wanted to give you a fresh on the spot answer. I've had many challenges over the years, but I would say more recently, very, very excited and proud of my business partner. She's not really my business partner, but that's what I call her. But we've been together for 9 years, worked together. She launched a reading retreat business as a side hustle from TikTok, and it has exploded. And she's actually pursuing her business full time and luckily gave me 6 months notice. Thank you, Lauren. But as a business owner, I realized that I put a lot of trust and responsibility on one person in a business that isn't me, the business owner. And so in this unique situation, she's been a part of helping me actually find replacement, you know, for those responsibilities. In this case, creative director, copywriter, and project manager, which has all been one person. But I would say now moving forward in business, I will never put that many responsibilities on one person to deliver moving forward. I think I'm really excited about AI platforms can help us automate in our businesses for busy working professionals. And I'm excited about how we can delegate those human first responsibilities to specialists. I think the future workforce is specialists. I am a generalist, and it's just by nature of my curiosity and just what I like to learn and share. But I think the future is really specialists, people being an expert in one particular arena and being able to build a really viable, exciting business around that expertise.
I agree. Very smart. And since you mentioned AI, you want to tell our listeners about this book that you have?
I would love to. I would love to. You know, I post a video a week, sometimes two videos a week if I'm feeling ambitious. This is not one of those weeks on YouTube. And YouTube videos are my way to learn about new things and bring people along for that journey. Last summer, I posted a video about ChatGPT, and I had maybe posted two or three, and I got an email from Adams Media, an imprint of Simon & Schuster, that said, Phil, we'd like to pay you an advance. Here it is to write this book. We've been looking for an author and we like how you explain AI terms to everyday people that are overwhelmed by this topic. And that resonated deeply with me. It's a huge focus of really every aspect of business, not just automation or productivity. Branding, you know, has been my world for many years. Anyways, the book is finished. It's published in October. It's called AI for Small Business. And we tackle every aspect of business from a standpoint of empowering you, not overwhelming you with the topic of AI and the idea that we can actually automate things to enable us to focus on the things that humans do best in the areas where we as small business owners have highest impact.
Wow. I think that's going to be so helpful because it is the small business owners, I feel like, that are just really intimidated about the whole thing. I gave a workshop last week about this very thing to the crowd for Visit Wichita, and it's all small to medium sized business owners here in Wichita. And they were all just like, oh my gosh, thank you for getting us started on this. All we needed to do was start asking ChatGPT GPT some prompts and that like got them going. And so we just talked about prompts for 45 minutes and it was so helpful to them.
I love it. Yeah, that's amazing. It's just getting people comfortable, almost like comfortable to the point where we open Google without thinking twice and we enter a search term.
Exactly.
Now, in many cases, there's a great free plugin called Web Chat GPT, which is free. But what it'll do will display your Google search as if you typed it into ChatGPT side by side. It's a Chrome extension. So you can start to train your brain on why you might use ChatGPT for something instead of Google.
I love it. Yes, that was a conversation. Which one? Like, if I can find this on Google, boy, I'm like, well, it's all in, it's let's talk about the prompt. It's all in the prompt and how to do that effectively. And so it's a hot topic and it's something that everyone needs to understand how to do, especially going forward. You're going to have to innovate. So you are, wow. I think I'm going to get your book and I'm going to read that book and share it with everyone I know because they need it. Like, just like they used to like be weird about social media back in the beginning. 100%. This is that. They need to get on board with this.
100%. I had this exact conversation with my dear friend, Kim Garst, who's also heavy into AI. Yes. She and I both, you know, we both agree that social media was in the early 2010s what AI is now. It's kind of like the wild, wild west, but it's just a matter of comfort and confidence. That tends to be my focus. There's nothing you don't know to be able to just get your feet wet and not worry. You know, you're not behind on this. Your focus as a business owner is eyes on the prize. It's still running a business. But if we can share some of these ideas that help you make your life simpler, that's where this becomes really impactful.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Phil. This has been a lovely episode. I know that you gave lots of good nuggets for our listeners, things that we really like, practical tips that they can use right away. And I think that we did a great job of that with us here today. So thank you for that.
Thank you. That is the whole mission of my brand, is practical advice to build your brand. So yeah, you just said all the right things. I appreciate it. I really do.
Perfect. Well, and Miss Jen, we may or may not speak before you are a bride, but I think we might record one more before you go. Yeah. But, you know,
let's rock and roll.
I'll handle the prep for it. Anyway, all the best to you and yours. If not, I'm sure that our listeners are excited for you. So best wishes.
Yes.
All right.
Happy, happy wedding.
Thank you. So excited.
Okay, friends. This has been episode 147 of the Making a Marketer podcast, and we will catch you next time.